بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. After taqleed, which we didn't have to go over too many issues in taqleed. There's not too many issues that are discussed. We spent more time talking about the individual that those of us who are following him or they have questions regarding him. We try to explain his personality here. Now the rest of fiqh. We have two options how to address the issues in the ahkam. One option is start getting into explicit detail of the ahkam. Okay. In tahara, we start talking about all the details of wudu, all the details of ghusl, whatever else we have. If we want to take this fashion and address the issues like that, we won't even be able to finish half of tahara. Okay. We'll probably finish in the middle of wudu. Okay. Or ghusl maybe, maximum. This is one option that we have. The other option is for me to give an outline of what we have in each of the chapters of fiqh and then get to some of the details that I feel are more, maybe more applicable or people have more doubts regarding, and then leave the rest of it for the question and answer. I would like to go with the second option so that I can cover more of the topics in fiqh, because usually when we start to have fiqh classes, by the time people lose their motivation and you know they just the class stops, we haven't finished anything except for tahara or maximum salat. Okay. But it causes that people a lot of times are clueless regarding the likes of khums, okay, fasting a lot of times. The jobs that we can have and jobs that we're not allowed to have, eating and drinking, fiqh classes, we usually fall short in that. So I would go with the second option, and I hope that brothers and sisters here are also okay with that. So what I'm going to do, starting with tahara, I'm going to give an outline of what we have in Kitab al-Tahara, and then start getting to some of the details and see how much time we have and how much we can get done today, inshallah. And it seems like, although I wasn't planning it to be like this, it seems like tomorrow we will have to continue the discussion of tahara as well. And of course, it's one of the important parts of our daily life, so it's okay to have 2 days on tahara. The outline of tahara, we started a little bit yesterday on that. There's two main discussions. Tahara means to be pure, to be clean, cleanliness. These are the translations or the equivalents of tahara. Cleanliness, there's a physical and apparent cleanliness. Okay, our bodies and clothes being clean religiously. Obviously, we don't mean from dirt and filth, but religious cleanliness. There are certain things that religiously are not considered clean. They're considered filth or what we call nijasa. There are certain things that are considered clean, and we have certain things that are considered cleansers, mutahhirat. Okay, that's so. We have basically the apparent cleanliness or being clean religiously, and we have the spiritual cleanliness. Okay, the spirit, the soul, being clean, tahara. In this section of the spiritual cleanliness, we have wudu, ghusl, and tayammum. These are what give us a spiritual cleanliness. The soul becomes tahir, it's clean, and it can at that point address Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in prayer and other things which we'll discuss. So, the second type of cleanliness in Arabic, it is called tahara an al-hadath. Okay, the filth, the spiritual filth is called hadath, whatever would cause us to have to perform wudu or ghusl. We're not in the state of tahara anymore. That is called hadath, and then when we perform the tahara, is either ghusl, tayammum, or wudu. And the other form of tahara, the one that is physical, in Arabic it is called tahara an al-khabath. Things that are not tahir, they're not clean, they're called khabath. In the discussion of tahara min al-hadath, okay, where it's the spiritual cleanliness, as we said, there's three main discussions: wudu, ghusl, and tayammum. In wudu, the general outline of the discussions is how is wudu performed? Okay, what are the conditions for the wudu to be valid? The doubts in wudu, what breaks wudu, what is wudu wajib for, why do we need to make wudu, or in what cases we need to make wudu. Those are the main discussions that we have in wudu. In ghusl, again we have the discussion of how to perform it, what causes it to become wajib. We have five listed: janaba, menstruation, nifas, istihadha, touching a dead body, and dying. All the discussions regarding burial, the burial ceremony of a Muslim when he passes away, are discussed in this section. Even the Salatul Mayyit, you can't find that in Kitab al-Salat, you'll find it here. If you're looking for how to perform Salat on a person who's died, you need to check it out in the Kitab al-Tahara, not in Kitab al-Salat. In Tayammum, the discussions are, the main discussions are how the tayammum is performed, and the other discussion is regarding what are the cases that tayammum is going to replace wudu and ghusl. Because as we know, or we should know, wudu and ghusl are what we would normally make tahara with using, and if they're not possible, or in some cases, tayammum is a replacement for them. In tahara an al-khabath, okay, where we're talking about this, the physical and the apparent level of cleansiness or filth, there are two main discussions. One is the discussion of the nijasat. What are considered unclean or najis in Islam? And other than that, anything that is not considered najis is going to be tahir. So there's not really a discussion what are the tahir items. Anything that is not najis is going to be tahir. But what we do have after that is mutahirat. What makes other things tahir? If something has become najis, how do you make it tahir? These are the main discussions that we have here. Now, getting into, I'll start with tahara min al-hadath, the spiritual tahara. And we'll start with wudu. A general outline of how it's performed for those who, in case we don't know, or some of the details we don't know. The amount of, or the process is, we need to wash our face first, then the hands, and then we need to wipe the head and the feet. The face needs to be washed from where the hair grow for a normal face. Okay, if a person is losing their hair, if men are losing their hair, if they're getting bald, okay, it's where usually the hair starts growing. So if someone, the hair starts moving up, you don't have to start washing from all the way up there. Where the hair usually starts to grow. And also, you know, if some people have hair coming all the way down to here, you know, it's where usually the hair starts to grow, we need to wash from that area all the way down to the chin. Okay, the bone here, not under the chin, that doesn't have to be washed. And in terms of the width, it has to be the hand span between the middle finger and the thumb, okay, whatever that covers in a normal face and hand. In other words, you have people, the normal is, you have the hand is one size and the face is one size. This is the normal hand. And some people's face is a little too big, and sometimes some people's hands is a little too big, okay. What we're talking about, if someone has a normal, or the proportion, okay, of the hand and the face is normal, the between the middle finger and the thumb is the range of how much needs to be washed in terms of the width. Anything more than that is not necessary, but out of ihtiyat, if we want to wash a little on the other sides, that's going to be fine. The other thing, or after the face, what we would have to, or sorry, on the face, we would have to wash from top to bottom. We can't go from bottom upwards. But what that means is not that, you know, we have to spend too much time to make sure we're going a straight line down, okay, from top to bottom. If it goes sideways a little bit, that's going to be fine too. The thing that we've been told is that we can't go from down upwards, from the bottom of our face, and wash it upwards, in the upwards direction. The hands, what we need to wash is from the elbow down to the end tip of our fingers, on both hands. In regards to how we wash it, for the face, okay, and for the hands, it doesn't make a difference how we perform this wash, okay. In other words, people ask, do I have to use the right hand? You don't have to use the right hand. You can use the left hand to wash the face as well, for whatever reason you want to do so. But of course, it's better to use the right hand. But anyhow, for the right hand and the left hand, when you're washing it, the important thing is that it's washed, okay? Whether you stick your hand in water and bring it out, or you stick your hand under the tap and you wash it like that, or you use your left hand and start washing it, the important thing is that it's washed from the elbow to the end of the, or the fingertips. And it's washed from top to bottom, from the elbow down. If we're sticking our hands in, we can't dip our hands, fingers first with the intention of wudu, and we can't start washing our hands from the bottom part of it upwards if we're sticking our hand under the tap. It's important that we go from top to bottom. For the right hand and the left hand, the same. And after that, we've got to wipe the top of our head. The amount that we have to wipe is not a specific amount. As soon as you touch your head and you wipe it a little bit, that's enough. That's all you need to do. Okay, you don't have to go from the back all the way up front. No, you don't have to do it. Or a particular direction even, going from back there all, you know, to the front. You can go backwards and you can go sideways. It doesn't make a difference. And a little bit is enough. That's for the head. And then the feet, we've got to wipe from the toes, the end of the toes, until the ankle, okay? The joint, the ankle, that's where we need to wipe it. And we've got to do both feet, obviously. The order has got to be preserved in this way that, you know, the face is done first, then the two hands, first the right hand, then the left hand, and then the top of the head has got to be wiped, and then the feet. On the feet too, another thing that we need to let people know is that it's not necessary to use the right hand. This is, of course, Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwa, obviously, that we're saying. You don't have to use the right hand to wipe the right foot and then the left hand to wipe the left foot. You can use, you do it the other way around, or use one hand to do both of the, or wiping both feet. This is the general look of how wudu is done. The conditions of validity for it to be valid. This was just the performance. First condition for the wudu to be valid is the intention. Okay, it's got to have the intention. The intention, a few things to clarify. There's a lot of misunderstandings regarding the intention. We don't have to make the intention of what this wudu is for. Okay. This is for prayer, or for reading Qur'an, what it is for. We don't have to make any type of that. Or we don't need to specify what that is for. Okay. What we do need to make sure we have in our mind, and that's the essence of the intention is actually that, is that I'm making wudu, number one, it's obvious. And the other thing is that I'm doing this for Allah, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has told me. Not because somebody else is watching or anything else. It's because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has told me to do so, and that's why I'm doing that. The other thing regarding the niyyah, the intention, and what I'm saying here about wudu regarding the intention goes for anything that requires an intention in Islam. Okay. We are told sometimes that the intention, some people say, what should I say in my intention? Okay. And then when the salat time comes, we want to pray, the question is, okay, people start asking who is the imam, okay, who's leading the prayer, so I can mention that in my intention as well. Or they ask, is it qasr or tamam here, or do I need to make the intention of four rak'ah in the prayers? Sorry, when I'm praying Maghrib, when I'm traveling, do I have to make the intention of qasr as well, or do I not make the intention of qasr? Or when you talk about the mustahab prayers, people say, okay, what should be the intention of that mustahab prayer? Okay. You're saying, like, after ziyarah, do a mustahab prayer, 2 rak'ahs. Okay. And they ask, what should be the intention of that? Intention, okay, brothers and sisters, generally this is according to all of the maraja, it's not just for Ayatollah Khamenei. Intention is something internal, okay. Words, when we speak, that's not the intention, okay. And the niyyah that is mentioned here is not speaking of what you are what is going to be your intention. You don't have to mention, I am praying 4 rak'ahs of dhuhr prayer behind such and such scholar, qurbatan ila Allah. Okay. You don't have to do that, and you don't need to do that at all. You shouldn't do that, actually. Sometimes it could cause problems. No, you don't need to make sure of any of that either. What you need to make sure is that this is happening for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And further on, or furthermore, what needs to be said is that this intention is just about knowing what we are doing. Like when we're doing the dhuhr prayer or the as prayer, what are we praying? What intention should we have regarding what type of prayer this is? It's just knowing it. Because when we talk about prayer, inshallah, we will say that we need to specify what prayer it is in the cases where there's two or more prayers that can be performed at that time. This is this dhuhr or is it asr? We need to specify that as our intention. But the whole idea of the intention is just the idea of knowing what you're doing and what you're doing it for. That's it. I just need to know I'm doing wudu and I'm doing it for Allah. That's it. It's not a very difficult process of making the intention. Just as simple as that. That's the first condition. The second condition, the water that is used has got to be tahir. If it is not tahir, it is not going to count. The third condition is that the water has got to be mubaha. Okay. In other words, I have got to have permission and allowance to use that water. It either belongs to me, I own it, I have bought it, I've paid for it. Or if it's somebody else's, if I'm using somebody else's tap, they're okay with me using the water for this purpose. Okay. If I don't have permission to use that water, the wudu is not going to count. The fourth condition is that the water has got to be mutlaq. Okay. Again, this concept of itlaq and idafa, the water should not be mudaf. What is mudaf water? What is mutlaq water? If something is just called water, okay, not scientifically water, H2O, something that, you know, is just purified water, or even beyond that, is what is it called? The distilled water. You don't need to have distilled water that is only H2O, okay. There's a lot of other ingredients that are in water. They don't cause a problem. When we say it's got to be just water, okay, it's talking the general understanding, or the understanding of the general public. What do the people see? If they call this water, do they call this water, or do they call it juice? Okay, or do they call this like rose water? They don't call it just plain water. You can't get a cup of rose water and call this water. It has water in it, but you can't just call it rose water. If I say, give me some water, you pour me a cup of rose water and give it to me, I'm going to say, I didn't ask for that. I asked for water. Although it's clear, okay, but the urf, the general public understands this not to be just water. Okay, so it's based on that. Even if in the rivers, you get some water from the river, well, you know, it's got a lot of mud in it. It's got a lot of other ingredients in it. It's not as clean as like tap water that we have nowadays. That's still water. The sea water, that's water. You can go dive in the sea, make ghusl, that's fine. Or in swimming pools, and people are asking, is, you know, the chlorine, does that cause it to be mudaf? No, it's water. People see that, they say this is water. So what it says, that it shouldn't be mudaf, it shouldn't have anything mixed in it. It doesn't mean that it shouldn't have anything mixed in it. It shouldn't be that the people don't call this just plain water. It shouldn't be like that. They should be able to call this plain water. That's the condition. If it's pretty clear, we have, you know, a doubt that's not really based on legitimate reasons, whether or not this is mudaf, then we can use that water and perform the tahara, the wudu or ghusl, or whatever we need to perform. By the way, these conditions, many of them at least, are going to be the same conditions for ghusl as well. Anyhow, we're talking about the conditions of wudu right now. The next condition is obviously that the person should not be ill in a way that they can't perform wudu, that the wudu, the water is harmful for them. The next condition is the order that we mentioned, that has to be there. The eighth condition is a condition called muwalat. Okay. And this is also sometimes misunderstood. I can't perform one part of wudu and then do the other one a little later on. Okay. What do we mean by later on? Okay. Some people say, they ask the question that, can we make the wudu in this way, that I wash my face in my hands and then I want to go sit down to make or wipe my feet. Okay, and there's no seat around there. I have to walk for 10 steps. Am I allowed to do that? Yes, that's not a problem. Okay, of course, just walking the steps, so that's not the criterion. What this means in wudu, the criterion is this: in normal circumstances of temperature, and you know, if it's not too windy or too hot, the amount of time that you have between washing the one part and then going to the next part is that the previous parts of wudu don't dry up. Okay, if you wash your hand, sorry, your face, and then the right arm, and then the left arm, and then you want to do the mask, wipe the top of the head and the feet, you start a conversation with a brother or sister, and you talk until they dry up, all three of them dry up, then the wudu, what you've done, is invalid. You have to start all over again. So that's the eighth condition. And the ninth condition is that the individual, and this is the last condition, is that the individual has got to perform the wudu themselves. Okay. What that means is that this washing process, I have to do it myself. Okay. I can't hold my hand and somebody else come and wash it for me, or somebody wash my face for me. They can pour the water for me, but washing the face, the washing part, I have to do. These are the conditions for the wudu to be valid, and I think we'll have to leave the rest of it for tomorrow, inshallah. If there's any questions, we have about 10-11 minutes. Yes?
I've heard the condition that for the water, I stopped off for a second, I wasn't too sure if you mentioned it. As long as the properties, which is color, taste, and smell of the water, doesn't necessarily change, then you consider this water to be qutr, or water that can be used.
Are you discussing the condition of tahara or mudaf? Mutlaq and mudaf.
Water that's pure.
Well, it depends.
You can use it. Then.
Well, you can use it. There's two conditions for the water. One is that it's tahir, and one that is the other one is that it shouldn't be mudaf. The discussion of color, taste, and smell is usually mentioned in the context of the condition of tahara, not if is it mutlaq or mudaf. Okay, so in other words, in qur water, that's where it's mentioned. Qur water, if you have the water, a water that the amount of it is qur, and it's not connected anywhere, it's not like tap water, it's not running water, it's not raining water, any of those, that inshallah we'll have to get to. Anyhow, it's qur water, and najasa touches it, but the color, taste, or smell does not change, that water still remains tahir. But if it's less than qur, that doesn't happen there. That condition, or that quality, those three qualities that you mentioned, are not really involved in the itlaq and the idafa. Okay, it could have a different color even, but if the urf, the general public, calls this water, like I said, the water that nowadays we're usually used to, okay, is clear. Okay, but if you take a cup of water from the ocean, from the sea, it's not going to be clear. The color is going to be different. Okay. So the color, smell, and taste is different than what we usually call water, but it's still called water. Everybody calls that water. You don't call that salt water. Sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
Do you use both hands to perform, to wipe the face, to pour the water on the face?
Yeah, you can use both hands. Yeah. You can use both hands, one hand, either one of them, no hand, stick your face under the water, either way it's going to...
While I'm pouring, I wipe the face.
That's fine, yeah. Yeah.
Question.
Yes.
Just nowadays the weather is a little dry outside, and it's cold, so oftentimes people use moisturizers just to prevent chapping and dryness. So if you're trying to do wudu, if you've used a moisturizer, how do you handle that? I mean, do you have to wash? And I guess what level of moisturizer? Because there's different kinds of moisturizers. Say, there's oil-based, and they say that certain ones are not oily. They don't have an oily feel to it. But where do you draw the line and say, well, you know, no moisturizers. You have to wash it all off first, and then do wudu. Or can you work with moisturizers and can you do wudu? Where's that on?
Okay, I'll repeat the question. I think it's an important one, although we didn't get to that part of wudu. But anyhow, in wudu, obviously we need to wash the skin. Okay, if something is covering the skin and is not allowing water to reach the skin, then that's not going to count. So the question is on moisturizers, generally creams that we use, lotions that we use on our skin. Where do we draw the line? What type of moisturizer can we use? Can we use anything and then make wudu, or what happens there? Obviously, back in the days, they didn't have moisturizers that we do have today. So the law, I'll mention what the ruling is. Okay, the application of it, you have to look at it yourself. So I can't say, oh, this particular lotion has this much oil in it, therefore, after 5 minutes, you can make wudu. That's not something that I could do. You would probably know more regarding that. I can tell you what the ruling is in fiqh. The ruling is this. I need to know that the water is touching my skin. Okay. If I know something is blocking my skin, then obviously I can't make wudu with that. I need to get rid of that. If I'm doubtful whether something is blocking my skin, there's two types of doubt. One is that I am doubtful whether something is on my skin that would be covering it and blocking it or not. This is one type of doubt. In other words, I'm making wudu here. My job is to paint, okay? And that paint creates a barrier, okay? I'm doubtful whether I have any of that on my skin or not. In this case, I have to search, I look around. If I don't see it, I go on. Okay. If I don't see it, okay, and the doubt still remains, maybe there's this tiny bit and I can't clarify it. Okay. Well, that's enough. The normal search, you look into it. And of course, if the doubt is the way I mentioned it, because if someone is painting, the paint does block. If I doubt before making wudu, is something blocking my skin? That's a legitimate doubt. But if I have none of that, I'm just, I work in the office. I don't even work with ink. I type all the time. Maybe from somewhere something is blocking my skin. That type of a doubt you don't even pay attention to. Okay. But if it's a legitimate doubt, like I do work with things, with glue or things that, block the skin. I've just worked with it. Maybe some of that is there. I need to search and find out if it's there or not. If it's not there, then let's... If I find something on my skin... Or I've put something, in this case, what you're saying is that I've put something. If I'm not sure whether this is blocking the skin or not, okay. If I can make sure, that doubt comes to my mind. If I can make sure whether it's blocking the skin or not, then I make the decision with that. If it is blocking it, I need to remove it. If it's not blocking it, I can go ahead with the wudu. But if the doubt remains, I did all my research, I still don't know. Okay. It's possible that it's not blocking it. It's possible that it is blocking it. What do I do in this case? In this case, I've got to remove it. Or wait until I know it's been absorbed by the skin and doesn't exist. It doesn't create a barrier anymore. Let me take a question from the sisters. Before. Yeah. Yeah, this is a condition for normal people. The next stage is if they can partially help, okay, like someone pours the water on that body part, like on the face. I can't reach for the water and hold it and bring it up to my face and pour it on my face, but if there's water on my face, I can use my hand and just, okay, if I can partially help in the process, I can get somebody to help me in the process, I should do that. I shouldn't tell them to just wash it. I should try to help as much as I can.
So then, would it be correct to say that if you do have a person like that, that you can just guide their hand, you know, just hold their hand for them and guide it in the process?
You can, yeah, you can do that, but whatever that person can do themselves, they need to do that as well. Okay. In other words, they like, if I can, with the help of somebody, do this wudu, but I'm putting my own strength to it, I'm moving around too, I just need somebody to help me, like to complete that effort that I'm putting, then I need to use it in that way, and not just say, okay, you come and wash my face for me. Okay, using their hand and all of that.
Yes. After Salat, I found out that there's a barrier on my hand. Do I have to repeat the Salat?
Good question. If I see a barrier on my hand after Salat, do I have to repeat my prayer or not? There's a lot of different cases. One is that when I see that barrier, I know that it was there from before wudu. In other words, I come to the conclusion that this barrier, I was working with glue before wudu, I didn't work with it after wudu, I have made my wudu, I searched, I didn't find it, then I prayed, after prayer I saw there's a little bit of glue on my hand. Okay. In this case, I realized my wudu was invalid. Wudu is one of those conditions that if you know your prayer didn't have it, you have to repeat that prayer. So that's the answer there. But if you find it and you don't know if this barrier was caused before wudu or after wudu, in that case, the wudu is going to be considered valid, it's okay. The prayer that you perform is going to be considered valid. And you can also pray with this afterwards as well, because the wudu is considered valid. Follow-up question?
How dry does the hair have to be when you wipe your hair?
Another question is about... we said, I didn't mention this actually, as we're giving the general outline. When we wipe, for the parts of the wudu that we wash, it doesn't have to be dry. I can wash my hands after using the and it's still wet, and I start washing my face and my right arm and my left. I don't have to dry my hands. Okay. But for the parts that I have to wipe, they've got to be dry. Okay. Off completely, the shower off completely, then I can't. I have to dry my head first, and then I make wudu. The feet are the same way. If there's like water starts dripping on my feet, I can't just wipe my feet. I have to dry it off first and then make wudu on that and wipe the feet. Now, how dry do the feet and the head have to be? The condition is they shouldn't have a type of moisture that would transfer to your hand instead of the water from your hand transferring on there. Like if it's wet, soaking wet, or it's not like dripping wet, but it's wet enough that when you wipe it, the part where you've wiped, you know, it was wet and it's still wet. And actually maybe even some of the wetness in your hair got onto some of the water from your hair got onto your hand. Okay. That's not going to be allowed. But if you've dried it, it's damp. Okay, it's still moist, but it's not like wet. You can't say it's wet. All right. Wiping it at that point is going to be okay. It should leave an impression. The water should actually get onto the head or the feet, leave an impression. It's clear that this is where water has come onto it. It's affected it, and it shouldn't be transferring from that part, from the head or from the feet, to your hand. Yes.
Two questions, but they're related. First one is, for the parts that you wash, you can just wash them under the sink?
Yes, you can just wash them under the sink.
You can just wash them under the sink. And the second thing, is there a limit to the number of times you can wash your face or your hands?
Yes, there's a limit on how many times you can wash your face and hands or the arms that you need to wash. The first time is obviously wajib, is we need to wash it. If we don't wash it that one time, then we haven't washed it. The second time, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, it is allowed. He doesn't really say that it's mustahab to wash it the second time. It's allowed, you can wash it a second time. But anything more than that, third time is not going to be, third or fourth, it's not allowed. It's going to be haram. We can't do that. But what is the criterion of...
The wudu.
What is that?
It invalidates the wudu.
invalidating the wudu, I'm not sure, I don't think it invalidates the wudu. It's haram. Okay, it's a sin.
And then you separate the hands, that's right.
And the number of times, what determines, some people think when you say you can only wash it once or twice, you can't wash it three times, that means that you can't pour water on your face three times. No, you can pour five times on your face, and then you wash it. When you completely wash it, okay, when you finished washing it once, that counts as once, okay, no matter how many times you poured water on it. And when you finished once, then you make the intention that, okay, this is the second wash, you finish that, maybe you pour it another time, you know, or another five times, five handfuls of water you pour on your face, and you start washing it again. When you're completely finished with that, and you're like, okay, I'm done with the second time, if you want to start again the third time like that, that's not going to be allowed.
That's not allowed means the wudu is batil.
Just to be 100% sure, just to be 100% sure, doesn't seem to be haram. I mean, batil. It's only that it's haram. It's a sin.
There's no limits on the number of times you can wash your hands, your arms.
Face and arms doesn't make a difference. Both are the same. Yeah. Yes, as I said, it's not invalid. No, the wudu is going to be fine. It's a sin. It's haram to do that, but it's not going to make the wudu invalid.
If someone has had like 20 years of prayers with that three times washing face.
Prayers are okay. Because the wudu is valid. See, it's a sin. And sins, it depends on whether you know it or not. If I was never informed, of course, we should go and inform ourselves. But if I didn't even think that this was a ruling, and I have gone and researched my ahkam, but I was never told that this is actually haram, okay, I haven't really committed a sin. But regardless of that sin factor, the wudu that I've performed is going to be fine. It doesn't say, Aitla Khamani at least, the other maraja I would have to check, but Aitla Khamani at least does not say that it's invalid. It just says it's haram to do that. Yeah, the salats, since the wudu is fine, the salats are also going to be fine. Yes? Is it permissible to do wudu after ghusl? After ghusl al-jinabah, no. After the other aghsal, obviously, yes. According to Ayat al-Khamenei, the other ghusls don't count for wudu. And therefore, you need to make wudu after or before the other ones. But after ghusl al-jinabah, we're not allowed. Unless we have a doubt. Like, I don't know if I've invalidated the wudu, if the wudu has become invalid or not. Or the ghusl, the wudu part of it. In other words, to pray. Am I allowed to pray or not? Maybe I went to sleep or I went to the washroom, I don't know. I can make a wudu at that point. Okay.
And the point where you have to do wudu,
yes,
again, is when you sleep, is when you lose your...
I haven't talked about that yet. Inshallah, tomorrow I'll discuss the issue. Yeah.
Must you wipe the tips of your toes?
They say that the bottom of the toes don't need to be wiped. From the tip of the toe, it needs to be wiped to the ankle. The tip of the toe on top is from here. Okay, you start from over here. But people that go like this from the bottom, that's not necessary. We don't have to do that. Does any sister have any question before I get to brothers? Are they?
She's asking about the nail polish.
Yes. Nail polish, I mean, we're only talking about the wudu aspect of it. The other aspects of non-mahram seeing, we'll talk about that later. But wudu, it blocks the fingernails, and therefore the wudu is not going to be valid on it. But for the feet, because there's no particular toe that we have to wipe from the tip of that all the way to the ankle, we can leave one toe. If one toe is not does not have a nail polish on it, that's going to be enough. But for the hand, since we have to wash all of the fingernails as well, then it can't be on it at all. Yes.
With the dirt under the fingernail,
would the filth and the dirt under the fingernails invalidate the wudu? If the fingernails are not longer than what is usual, okay, what usually people, how long people usually keep their nails. Okay. If it's not longer than that, then we don't have to worry about what's underneath, okay, the fingernails. But if it's longer than that, then yes, it does cause a problem.
You can do wudu before ghusl, right?
You can do wudu before ghusl. Before what ghusl? Ghusl al-janaba. Yes, it can be done. In some cases, actually, of course, we haven't talked about ghusl, but in some cases, it's actually recommended, or it removes a karaha. Like, for example, it's makruh to go to sleep in the state of janaba. Okay, it's better to make ghusl al-janaba, or if ghusl is not possible, tayammum, whatever, but not to go to sleep with in the state of janaba. But in order to remove the karaha, it's sufficient to make wudu. If I don't feel like, you know, going to the shower right now, I can at least make wudu and go to sleep with wudu. It removes the karaha. Wajib wudu before ghusl al-janaba, it doesn't count. Like, it's not even mashru'.
That's only for ghusl, because for all other ghusl,
yeah. That's only for ghusl al-janaba, yes.
Would a wax or gel on your hair, or you know you can touch your, the skull of your head, but then you go to wipe your feet, but you still feel some stickiness from the gel.
Yes.
Is it possible to make wudu?
Good question. The brother is asking about gel or hair wax that we may have on. And well, I'll address the issue of wiping the head itself too, because the question was more specific than that, or a little different. Can we wipe the hair that has wax and gel on it? If it's blocking the hair or and the scalp, then we can't wipe on. We have to remove it. But if there's if it's not blocking the hair at all, okay, although it's on it, but it doesn't block it. Okay, it's touching our hand with the moisture, is touching the hair or the scalp, that's going to be allowed. So if the gel itself in the hair, it is it's causing a barrier, but I can reach my scalp with a wet finger or wet hand and touch the scalp, then that's going to be sufficient. But if the, in this process my hands start to feel a little oily and I want to wipe my feet, what is that going to, like, is that going to be sufficient or not? If it has caused the moisture in your hands to start to become mudaf now, okay, or if you have questions regarding that, it's maybe it's mudaf, it's, you know, shouldn't use that. But since the feet, you don't have to use two hands for wiping the feet, okay, you can use the other hand for both of the feet and wipe them.
Can you take water from your beard?
Not normally. If your hand dries up, then you can get water from your beard, yes. Any sisters have anything before?
Okay. Concerning the hair on the face, yeah. Does the water have to reach the skin, or is it sufficient just to cover the hair?
Facial hair. Does the water have to reach the skin as well or not? If it's... if the facial hair is not too thick, you can see the skin, okay, then you have to make sure it reaches the skin. But if it's, you know, it's pretty thick and you can't see the skin through it, then it's enough to just wash the exterior, the hair. Yes?
My question is that, you know, we sometimes have like bracelets or rings on.
Yes.
And when we are doing wudu, we like try to move them up or down.
Yeah.
For example, if you move them up so that the water can reach underneath it, would that be considered like, you know, making the water go up? Because it's supposed to be only in one direction, from up to down.
See, when you're like, if this would be the ring, okay, if I would want to wash it, first of all, if I turn it a little bit to get water under it, that's enough. If I'm sure that the water's reached it, that turning is okay. As we said, you don't have to necessarily go from top to bottom. If it's going sideways too, that's fine. We can't go that way. Okay, so that's going to suffice. But if we want to make sure, and we're trying to like bring it down a little bit, okay, and then we push it back up, the intention while when we are pulling it down is to wash for wudu. Okay, that counts. When we are pushing it back up, we shouldn't make the intention that this is washing for wudu, and if we don't make that intention, then it's going to be okay.
Okay.
bracelets, the same, yeah, for everything. Okay. Recite salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.